This is the Art Beauty Podcast, where we are always reaching for truth and beauty. Remember, the people and the brands on the show are not paying to be here, so we get to ask them those tough questions we know you want answered because you deserve to be informed so you can make the best choices for yourself. With that said, I'm Amber Milt, and today my fabulous co-host is Dr. Robert Whitfield. He is a board-certified plastic surgeon who specializes in explant surgery. We're going to be talking to him today. We like to have a lot of fun on this podcast, but we're going to be talking to him today about breast implant illness and sort of maybe the process of what an explant is like. We will be getting all into that. And before we do, I want to say thank you so much for being here, Dr. Whitfield. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, I said before, normally we keep things very lighthearted here, but one of the reasons that I started this podcast was because I want people to have access to information where they don't feel like it's being sold to them or pressured. So breast implant illness, and let's just get right into this. For people who aren't aware of this, can you describe what this is?
Sure. I think how I characterize it to my clients, and I just came out of a consultation with one, it's a chronic inflammatory process where a breast implant or a medical device is only one component. So I think a lot of people understand inflammation now, and everybody's trying to work on it through diet and exercise and lifestyle modifications. But in the face of a medical device, whether it's a hip, knee, or breast implant, dental implant, neurologic implant, whatever it is, those are foreign. And the moment one is placed into someone's body, your body reacts to it and tries to expel it. And that's natural. Your body builds scar around it. That's why when people have explants, we talk about taking the scar around it out or the capsule. So your body can interact with that. And we know from research that textured implants are more stimulating to the immune system. And those lead in some instances to breast implant associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma. So in my experience of over 2,000 explants, I've had patients have that lymphoma, and I've had patients have breast cancer. Right. And I think, for all intents and purposes, when you have chronic inflammation, it affects almost every system in your body. And that's why the symptom list, if you just Google breast implant illness, will have what is like a laundry list.
Yeah.
And so that's the problem with this. And it's a little unfair for the clients who suffer from it. It's a little unfair for the practitioners trying to help them with it, because on both sides, there's a lot of confusion, if that makes sense, because it doesn't really fit a pattern. And then people get, plugged into different specialists to look at their gut health or to look at their joint pain or their sinus problem or their headache or whatever it is. And it doesn't really fit a pattern that you're traditionally taught in medical school. And I think, for us, I've been super curious ever since college about genetics. And most of this boils down to you can't pick your parents and you can't outrun a bad diet.
Right. Okay. You can't outrun a bad diet. All right. So there are so many things that I want to pick your brain about. First of all, starting with the fact that, when you just started answering this before, you mentioned many different devices that can be implanted. I feel like this idea of breast implant illness has gotten so much coverage lately in the media, especially with so many celebrities who are opting to get explants. However, I think that it also can be very scary for somebody who's considering getting breast implants. And I do want to say, in 2022, breast implants were the second most popular plastic surgery of the 1.5 million done. I think it was just under 300,000 breast implants were done in 2022 alone. That's according to the American Academy of Plastic Surgery. So this is a very popular procedure. And I myself, when I went in, I had a breast lift. My doctor put in a small implant. And I have to give him credit. I'd never even heard of breast implant illness. And he made it very clear, hey, this is something to be aware of. Gave me research and literature to do stuff on. But I have to admit, I was like a little bit scared. So could this technically happen with any device that's put into the body? Or is it really more specific to breast implants? You mentioned before a knee implant. Are they finding other things, or do they think that breast implant are more are causing more issues? Or is that something we can even tell?
So it's, we'll distill it down. So when you're looking at breast implant or hip implant or knee implant, and you put them in someone, there's opportunities for those to get infected at time of placement. So if someone handed a surgeon an implant, hip, knee, breast, doesn't matter, and somehow contaminated it in the process of taking it out of the packaging or how it was delivered to the staff, then the surgeon would put it in and they would not know it was contaminated.
Right.
The second method would be if the surgeon somehow, upon taking a sterile device, then contaminated it upon placement. But those two are extremely uncommon. Obviously, with technique and precautions, those should be the least common. The most common is a blood-borne infection somehow contaminates it. And so you get a skin infection, a lung infection, a kidney infection, a bowel infection, a lung infection, a cold. And if it's, say, you know, I just had a patient in here who had sinusitis a lot. And so bacterial sinusitis, say, for instance, you clear your ears upon landing at a plane flight, but you have a low-grade ear infection. You're going to seed that into your sinuses. You're going to potentially make that bloodborne. And then your body has this wonderful surveillance system of complexity and will take care of you, except for it can't take care of a foreign body because it's not you.
Right.
Doesn't matter if it's a hip, knee, or breast implant. That can contaminate the surface and then form a colony, and that forms what's called a biofilm.
I guess what I'm asking, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear, are breast implants more likely than any other device that you might put into your body to cause illness, like we're seeing with this breast implant illness?
I don't have that data.
Okay, fair, yeah. Fair, totally fair. You know, so going back to, you know, we mentioned that there are a laundry list of symptoms that are associated. And I'm so glad that you are coming on and making this work, because I have to say, I think that in general, I'm going to make a big generalization here, women suffer from a number of different things. Fibromyalgia, lupus is one of these that are sort of these all over body disorders that have sort of gone under the radar, untalked about. When you have something like breast implant illness that is not as maybe easy to pinpoint, how can we begin to identify that that is what we have? Like, if a patient comes to you, how do we know that it's something related to the breast implants and not some other systemic issue?
Yeah, I'll explain how people get to me now. They've seen a lot of different doctors.
Right.
And many people have abandoned traditional doctors because they don't find an answer. And they've went to integrative care, functional medicine, chiropractic care, acupuncture, any holistic provider who's willing to offer them a solution.
Right.
And most of these folks, I think, are really trying to do the best they can to help what is just what I said at the beginning, a chronic inflammatory process. But many of them never ask the patients if they have an implant.
Right.
So many women don't want to share that they have it. Many providers are afraid to ask about it. And I think it should be the number one thing you check.
Right. Is really,
do you have a device? Because it doesn't matter if a male came into an office and had all the chronic inflammatory symptoms and went and saw their orthopedic surgeon, even though that knee looked okay and felt okay, they would still check x-rays, all these things to make sure that that thing is not infected. They may aspirate fluid from it. They will go to great lengths to make sure that that knee is not the source of that problem. And once they're satisfied, then they'll move on. Right. Now, you take a plastic surgeon, and there are ways to characterize it. You can get an MRI to see if it's ruptured or leaking. You can get a high-definition ultrasound to look at it, see if there's fluid around it. Any implant that has fluid around it, basically from the work done by Dr. Tebbets, he would consider it to be infected. And that's one of the most famous people, rest his soul, in plastic surgery about devices. So, you know, just this week I took a pair of implants out, and one of them had a lot of fluid around it. I was like, okay, well, I don't go out and always tell people, like, I think this is infected, because I've done several thousand of these, and I do a polymerase chain reaction or a PCR test on every single one of them. It takes about 2 weeks to get back, and that gives you the true, you know, quote unquote, forensic diagnosis of a bacterial or fungal infection. And on the internet, it's written, you know, all over the place that mold's a huge problem in breast implant illness. It's not. Implants are not riddled with mold. I don't care what TMZ, I don't care what anybody shows you. I have done over, you know, probably 1,200 of those with PCR testing in my study that's going to be published hopefully this in Q1, I hope. I've done over 900 in the consecutive fashion. Since February 14th of 2019, all of my patients have had PCR testing. All of them get PCR testing. So the incidence in my personal case study is basically 30%, give or take a few percentage points. So roughly, we'll just say a third of them have biofilm, which is a low-level microorganism. In the instance that we're going to discuss, it's a bacteria called Cutibacterium acnes.
Okay. So
it's the bacteria. It's not staph. It's not strep. It's not Pseudomonas, Acinetobacter, all these weird things. It's definitely not a fungus.
But I'm sorry, is this in the fluid or we're talking about the mold?
This is the super capsule, your tissue.
Okay. So, you know, I'm so sorry, dumbing this down a little bit. When we're talking about breast implant illness, that is going to be something that, you know, I guess I just want to be careful, right? Because I don't want people, when as a doctor, do you say to your patient, hey, maybe it's not the breast implant, maybe it's stress, right? You know, I just want to make sure that when people are hearing this, I want them to take this very seriously. I want them to know when they should come and see you. But I also don't want somebody to say, gee, I haven't been able to sleep for a week. Is it my implants?
Yeah, I have a whole program built around examining this topic. So everybody asks, do I have one test that can tell you whether or not you have this problem? And so the short answer is nobody has a test, not me. Not anybody, but I look at your genetics, which I think are foundational. We look at a toxicity test. So everybody has a certain amount of detox ability. I think everybody understands that now. And your exposures are what contribute a lot of this. So mold is a common exposure environmentally. It may be in your home, where you work. I live in Austin, Texas. The air quality here has gone down every year I've lived here, and it has a very high amount of mold and cedar, other things that I'm very sensitive to. So we look at all those things as well as heavy metals. And for your listeners, you've probably discussed things like parabens, like BPAs, everything. So your products have to be paraben free. And if you have any question, go to the environmental working group and type in your product to figure out what is in it. The more important, more like subtle thing is the food you eat is severely compromised in the United States. So it's sprayed with folic acid. So for everybody listening, you can't do anything with folic acid. You're not designed to do anything with it. It's a fortifying material in all white products, white flour, white rice. Those things, if you don't methylate well, and you know, for your audience, you may have been told you have the MTHFR gene, you may understand you don't methylate well. So if you add a bunch of folic acid into a diet of somebody who doesn't methylate well, they'll get crazy. They'll almost have like ADD.
Okay.
So that is a problem that exists in about 40 to 50% of the population in general. But if you look at my patients who have and suffer from breast implant illness, that's virtually all of them.
Got it.
So they don't methylate well. So once again, you can't pick your parents.
Right.
And you can't outrun a bad diet. So don't eat fructose, sucrose. Don't eat processed foods. Don't eat gluten. Don't eat dairy. I'll tell you not to drink wine from this country because it's terrible.
Right.
I'll tell you not to drink beer because it's got gluten in it. So I'm not your friend when it comes to having habits, because I'm about lowering your inflammation. So one, you'll do better, live longer. But as I operate on you, I need you to recover. So my whole program, my SHARP program, is Strategic Holistic Accelerated Recovery Program, is based on genetics, toxicity, gut health, food sensitivity, and hormone balance. So when people want to know, what they can do about this problem. And they're not everybody, you know, is interested in or wants to see me for surgery. Right. So that program exists to help those patients get the answers they're trying to find through other providers and practitioners. And I feel like everybody's trying to help them. I just see this is my practice. So I see these patients every single day of the week.
So, you know, are you, let's say we have a listener out there who's having what kind of symptoms? What are some of the things that we're seeing? Inflammation, you know, we know can cause a host of things, but what are some of the most common, what are some of the most common symptoms you're seeing directly related to breast implant illness?
Sure. From like standard things I get told every day, I actually was having bone broth at my local place, The Well in Austin, and one of my patients who's coming in today saw me there and came up and said, I'm seeing you tomorrow. I want to talk to you. I have all these symptoms. So her symptoms are a laundry list, but her neurologic symptoms are sound sensitivity, light sensitivity. She has dry eyes. She has a lot of sinus type congestion. She has a little tickle in her throat that sometimes makes it so that she has difficulty taking even her supplements. They'll kind of catch in her throat. In her chest, she gets tightness. She gets chest pain. Sometimes she feels like she has her heart racing or palpitations. She even gets shortness of breath sometimes. In her arms and legs, she sometimes will get nerve pain, which can be burning or tingling or pins and needles. She gets joint pain. She may get muscle pain, and it kind of moves around. So it's a very moving target. And now we're going to get to the part that's really problematic is a woman's gut health. And so there's lots of things that are problems there. This patient in particular has trouble with absorption and has been told she has leaky gut, and it's been proven on her GI map. So right. When you look at a gut microbiome, you know, if you don't have the proper amount of food for your microbiome, which are your own bacteria start feeding on you. Right. So you have to have an intact, what's called a brush border to absorb things. But if someone's been given prolonged bouts or prolonged runs of antibiotic therapy for like sinuses or UTI, you'll basically affect your microbiome to the point where you'll develop leaky gut. So the tight mm-hmm. junctions will become loose. You won't absorb well. You may have constipation, diarrhea. You may have bloating, swelling, pain. Like, it's just a mess. So basically, our supplementation is designed to avoid that. So I use a lot of liquids, and I use less and less capsules because people have so much trouble in absorption. And you want to be like avoiding things like soy, which are in a lot of capsules.
I guess so, and I don't want to be training comments. Somebody very close in my life has serious digestive stomach. The laundry list that you just mentioned has never had breast implants. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, do we need to look at this as something like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it sort of like when it comes to breast implant illness, it really needs to be approached from a holistic point of view. It's not as cause and effect as I fell down the stairs, I broke my leg.
Right.
It's not, okay, got it. Okay, because these things can, and that's why you have this program that takes a really holistic view of that.
Right.
Do you ever find people who think they have breast implant illness, they have the breast implants removed, and the problems are still there?
Yeah, and that's, so if you go back to the biofilm, so that's a bacterial contaminant. So about a third of the patients in my practice have that.
Okay. If
I do their case, and that's the principal driver. All right, so it's just the bacteria that's driving their immune system. When you do that case, then you'll have the people in that first week, and you've seen some of these folks, they have this kind of miraculous turnaround. So that's more of an infective type recovery process, because if you take out an infected device, then you turn off the signal to the immune system and they'll get better more quickly. Now, that used to happen a fair amount in my practice, but now I've been around doing this for over 7 years and a couple thousand cases. So I don't see those patients anymore. I see more complicated cases now. So they've seen the famous people around the country. They've been put on their programs and they're still having, to your point, problems.
Yeah.
So it's not for lack of trying by practitioners or the patients. They're trying.
Right.
But the problem is a little bit more complicated. And if you have a great integrative or functional practitioner who understands inflammation, they're going to do their best to lower your inflammation.
Right.
They're going to plateau because you still have a breast implant or another device. And that device may be the, you know, the thing that is the crux of the problem, if you will.
Got it. So it's not like if you are having these issues and remove the breast, it's not a guaranteed immediate recovery because that could be just one part of the problem. You know, as a plastic surgeon, have you ever done breast implants?
Yeah. So for your audience, my background is in oncology. So I did head and neck cancer reconstruction, breast cancer reconstruction, where my niche was not to put into implants, but I was doing something called a deep flap reconstruction, where I used the tissue of the abdomen and we would reconstruct using your own tissue. Because of my focus on that and microsurgery, I didn't do a lot of implant-based reconstruction. But even back then, I was asked to take care of patients who had developed problems with their implant-based reconstruction. Typically, they were referred to me because I worked at a tertiary center. And so I would say, okay, you came to me, you had a breast implant reconstruction for cancer, and you were having capsular contracture or pain or rashes or whatever. And you're just like, Dr. Whitfield, can you do anything? And I said, well, all right, if it's a foreign body reaction, by removal, you will remove the stimulus to your immune system with your own tissue, which is your own genetic material, provided everything went well with the surgery, which we had a very high success rate above 95%, that would go away. If that was the problem, that would just go away. And then it's not like I would wash my hands of it, but back then I knew that I had done what I knew how to do at that point to take care of that problem. Now, fast forward to the group I have now, where I know if I just do that part, there's still a lot of work to do in many of these cases. So genetic testing, toxicity testing, microbiome testing, food sensitivity testing, and hormone testing help fill in the rest of the picture so that you do have a holistic approach to taking care of that person so that you're not leaving them trying to find answers to problems you didn't identify at the time. So the program exists to fill in all of those things to the best of our ability around it. And I'm always learning and I remain curious about the problem because I think it's a very complicated, you know, problem. And you mentioned fibromyalgia. Like if I have someone come sit in front of me who has breast implants, who's got fibro and can't even sit still, like they're just crawling out of their own skin. I have a hyperbaric chamber in my office. I will put them in that complementary and try to get their autonomic nervous system calmed down. Because the more oxygen deficit you have, the more hypoxia you create, the more muscle tension you have, the more pain you have.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's clear to me that just from listening to you, just up one, how complicated the human body is, and that something like breast implant illness, I think it makes me so sad because I read these stories about women. I've heard your own podcast where lives have been changed by this. And it's just, I guess I was kind of hoping that it was a little bit more clear, like if you're noticing X, Y, and Z, probably you should have your implants explanted. But it seems like there's so many factors. It's no wonder it's so frustrating probably to so many women out there.
It is. I don't, you know, people are like, oh, you just take out implants. I'm like, if it was that easy, that would be great.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not.
A little bit more complicated from head to toe than just that. So
can you quickly, or not quick, but can you walk us through what is that process? You know, if somebody were to come and see you, they've identified, hey, you know, an explant might be right for me. What is that process like?
Sure. I mean, I just hopped on after a consult. So the patient came in and they've gone through. I mean, most people show up with a notebook now for me to go through. And so that's fine. Like I said, everybody's trying to fill in pieces the way they can. And then when they tell me the story, I think I've worked really hard to understand genetics. And working backwards from that, it makes it much easier to understand why they behave the way they behave. And once you understand their exposures, like this person said, they had a home with mold in it. Like, yeah, you, I just kind of wait till the end to ask them and like, okay, why don't you tell me if you've ever been exposed to or had mold in a home, a work, a vacation rental, just tell me, like, how did you feel? Oh, I'm allergic to mold. Oh, I'm really sensitive to it. I'm like, well, mold causes a lot of bad things, anxiety, depression, gut health problems, mitochondrial dysfunction. So like it becomes a really easy thing for me at this point after probably almost 5,000 consults of this and 2,000 explants to sit there, hear the story and go, okay, well, she doesn't methylate well. She has probably an antioxidant problem. She has a glutathione problem. She has this problem. She has estrogen toxicity. And that leads to all these other things. So if you get someone who comes in and has all these laundry lists and they tell me they have extremely bad periods, pain, debilitating, cycle, and they've been diagnosed with PCOS and endometriosis, and those are functions of estrogen toxicity. So if you have all the genetic detox problems, plus you have estrogen toxicity, plus you have a poor diet, plus you have mold exposure, plus whatever, I mean, you're going to have this as an issue, and they're going to try to help you, whatever provider is, they're going to try to help you to the best of their ability. But if you have an implant in place, it's super hard for them because that's just such a big driver of inflammation. So I end up framing it this way. I don't have to tell anybody to have surgery. They come to me and they've resigned themselves to this fact. Ours is just trying to help them through the process and make sure we fill out, the best of the ability. I have a detox program. So I have detox practitioners who use CellCore to help them with detox, and we have surgical follow-up and supplements to support lowering inflammation through the course of the year. I follow them. So we try to make sure that we're covering the bases. We have a psychologist now to help with the psychological aspect of this, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
And socially, we have more support, advocates, and health coaching. It's a complicated problem that needs a multidisciplinary approach.
So, you said before about 1/3 of your patients, you remove the explant, they feel better very fast. Is that correct?
They can.
From what you've seen? Does that mean that 2/3, what percentage of those never get better? And maybe I would hate to say, like, did the implant maybe not have as much of an effect as they thought?
Well, that's where the rest of it comes into place. So I feel like we've closed the gap on that now. So if everybody thinks of a bell-shaped curve where you have people who, get well right away after surgery, and then people who take forever, you're trying to close those ends into the bell.
Right.
So the program is meant to make everybody recover in a more timely fashion. And I hope to learn more to close that gap even more. But the program exists so that I take the variability out of the recovery process. There's still going to be somebody somewhere who undoes me. And it's typically their liver doesn't do, what we want it to do. Or, there's another environmental factor that is escaping us. So there's something.
The human body is complicated. So, can you quickly, I just want to be mindful of time. What is that explant process like? So they come in, is it a 1-day surgery? Is it an hour surgery? Do they walk out? What is that recovery like? Can you walk us through sort of the high level what that is?
Sure. If you're in the continental United States, about 90% of my patients are from out of state, and then I have an increasing number out of the country. So if you're here from out of state, I expect you to be in Austin about a week.
Okay.
And then basically during that week, you're going to come to my place after surgery every day, basically barring, you know, specific weekend limitations for hyperbaric oxygen therapy, lymphatic massage, and red light therapy. Okay. So we have hands on lots of touch points in the office to make sure everybody's getting taken care of. And then when I have people from out of the country, it's a little bit more complicated because long haul flights have other stipulations. So I have them here for a couple of weeks doing the same thing. We just extend it. Now, we have a very strong partnership with a company here in town for food. So the Well in Westlake and the Well downtown in Austin serve gluten-free, dairy-free, and seed-free foods. Mm. So we provide complimentary gift cards to our patients for that, because it all starts with how you eat. If you don't eat properly at or around the time of surgery, despite me telling you, that's a behavioral problem. I can't change behavior. I can tell you what to do. I can show you what to do. And the patient I'm referring to today met me there last night, or found me there because I was having some bone broth. But if you go to our Instagram feed or my patients, they're going to talk about eating there. So it's the way you want to eat to recover, but it's the way you should want to eat to live a more healthy life.
Sure. So with that, how long is the surgery? And then what is that recovery like?
Yeah, surgery is anywhere from 2 to 4 hours.
Okay.
And
you're under, correct? So you're going to go under general anesthesia?
Yeah, I have a lot of people who come who want to explant the fat transfer so I can revolumize and rejuvenate the breast at the same time. Right. So those are more involved. They take a little bit longer. The recovery process is really dictated by your muscle, the chest muscle, and how it heals. Above the muscle is a very quick recovery. Behind the muscle, which is the majority of cases I do, takes longer. And the muscle itself is kind of a rate limiting step in terms of what you would call recovery or return to your quote unquote activities. So that can take a few weeks. It could take a few months. The thing is, I didn't do the first case, so I don't know how that's going to play out. You know, walking the day after surgery, you know, washing your hair, using your arms. The thing you don't want to do is like Pilates and yoga and kettlebells and, you know, push-ups and pull-ups and stuff like that, because that's going to hurt the muscle recovery or healing.
I mean, when I had my lift done with an implant under the muscle, I couldn't sit up by myself for the first 3 days. My husband literally had to help me. I had no idea that it was going to be that bad. So I'm just, you know, because you would think, well, it's up here. Why is my stomach being affected? But all those muscles together, like I literally couldn't sit myself up from a lying down position. I needed help.
Yeah. And we use a very specific protocol in the operating room and the night before to limit pain, nausea, inflammation. We really work to diminish swelling. And I really, I use a combination of long acting and short acting anesthetic to help with pain control. So sure. We really avoid narcotic usage to the best of our abilities. We know it works extremely well. So people are, you know, nobody's pain-free, but I've had people take very little, if no narcotic, and just use anti-inflammatory and do extremely well. I mean, for the most part, my patients are extremely motivated to recover and they don't want to use narcotic. So,
But you know, you make a good point. Your patients have already been through the implant phase of this. Right. Is that maybe, you know, and I guess everybody listening, if you're thinking about getting an explant, it means you got an implant. Should you base your recovery from the implant?
No.
To sort of how your explant will be, or do you think it's easier?
No.
Or more difficult?
It's more complex because of removal of the scar tissue. So, and then if I'm adding fat back, there's more areas of treatment. So that adds a level to it as well. I think, you know, people ask me, well, why don't people in your position do more fat transfers for augmentation? And the short answer is, if you're younger, which most of the clients get implants when they're younger, I didn't do that because I was taking care of cancer patients for the most part. So cancers, you know, we'll say in an older patient population. So my patients have always been a bit older, but when you're 18 or 20 or 22 or whatever, and they've, you know, saved and wanted to do this because of how they perceive themselves or what they saw, you know, growing up, or maybe they were bullied for having a small chest, whatever it may be, you're not going to stop that person from getting it. Also, they're probably not a candidate for a fat transfer because they didn't have a lot of fat. They were lean to begin with, and that's part of the problem, obviously. So when they're older, can you do it instead of a lift like you had, or a lift and an implant? And the answer is yes. But if your perception, or as Amanda Savage Brown says, your breast playbook is that implant appearance, then you're not going to want what a fat transfer shows you, because a fat transfer shows you a larger natural breast, not an augmented breast, if that makes sense. So the upper pole or the fullness in the upper chest is not what a fat transfer will do. It should never be depicted that way, because that's not possible.
Sure. So. Well, you have clearly dedicated your life to improving the lives of others. I want to thank you. I feel like one of the things that is so clear from talking to you is that this is not a very simple process to understand, but it's great to know that professionals like yourself out there are really listening to women who are, you know, I think probably prior to recently have been kind of at a loss for this and for what to do and where to go. If people want to see whether they're in the Austin area or not, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, we think education is the best. So my podcast, Breast Implant Illness, is the one where I drop as much educational information at no charge to anybody so they can learn that way, or shows I've been on like Dave Asprey or Lauren Bostick. And then you can obviously go to our URLs, drrobertwhitfield.com and breastimplantillnessexpert.com.
Amazing. I want to thank you so much for being on. Good luck with your patients who are coming in today. And of course, you listening at home, if you have questions that you want me to pass on to Dr. Whitfield or his team, I'm always happy to do so. You can email us at hello@rpdpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at RPD Podcast. I want to thank you so much for being on with us today, Dr. Whitfield.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, we will see you next Tuesday. Bye.